My name's Joseph William Morgan.
And what year were you born?
1947.
And where were you born?
And in Hackney, in Cambridge Heath.
And what did your parents do?
My dad used to work for the GPO, which is now BT, and my mum just like a housewife.
Okay. And what inspired you to get into tailoring?
Well, I left school at 15, and I didn't really... I thought I probably knew what I did. I wanted to do. I know I wanted to be a tailor or a chef. So my dad knew somebody that worked for Kilgour, which is just up the road, and he took me along to his workshop. And they didn't have any sort of vacancies. But when I was young, it was quite easy to get jobs. You know, there's lots of positions around, and especially for the crafts and apprenticeships. So I went to work for a tailor in Wimble Street, which is just over in Soho. And on the top floor, I was there learning how to make jackets.
How did that tailors help you in your career now?
Well, you know, I think, you know, when I was young, I always sort of liked clothes. And, you know, from the East End, we didn't have lots of money. So consequently, you had to alter your own clothes. And this is what I did at a very early stage. And I remember having some khaki shorts that didn't fit very well. So I altered those when I was at school. And I just had this sort of, there was a craft there that I was busting to learn. So when I left school, I went up to work for this fellow called Steve Corran in Wimble Street, and on the top floor, and I just learned how to make jackets. Not easy, you know, really difficult. 5 years, earning tuppence halfpenny, and yeah. Well, when I, the apprenticeship was my first slack position, but when I sort of became a coat maker, I thought, well, do I want to do this all the time, or should I just think about being able to learn cutting? So one of the bespoke houses that I worked for, they said, look, we need somebody. Do you want to come work for us? And I said, yes. So I went to work for a company called Wilkinson and Sons, who are opposite the church in George Street. So I had a couple of years there, and that's really the first, you know, experience I had of coming from the East End into a workshop, then to a front shop, and meeting some very eminent people. I was working away one day, and I was on my own, and the doorbell left. And you probably won't know, but there's a fellow called Harold Macmillan, who was the Prime Minister at the time, sort of came in, and I just had to sit him down. And you think, like, my goodness, you know, this is like really important people and eminent people. And this is really what happens in our world. You know, it's really the people that obviously have the finance and, you know, do well can afford the quality clothes that we produce. And that was my first experience of, you know, sort of very wealthy and eminent people being in my sort of like environment, really. It was really quite interesting.
Can you tell us about any significant people involved in your training?
Yes. The tragedy is, when I was young, all the tailors said, hey, this industry, when we die, it isn't going to be around. And you think, well, you know, that's a bit unfair, because, hey, I'd just like to get married, I'd like to get a mortgage, and just like to have a future. And the way these fellows are talking, I don't seem to have one. But fortunately, it wasn't correct. And yeah, fortunately, it's thriving now, and lots of young people that do come into the industry, like you guys. You know, we can just say there is a future, and it's looking good.
Can you tell us about any challenging aspects of your training?
It's all challenging, honestly. And the thing is, you've got to meet it. The thing is, again, what happens, the process is slow. So consequently, when you do things and you're taught correctly, you come along with these problems, and you cope with them. This is what's being taught professionally and taught correctly is all about, because you get strength from inside and you think, well, you know, I can do this. I'll take a hit, you know, this is wrong, and I'll go on to the next stage because I know I can do it. I believe in myself, which is very important. When I was an apprentice, we didn't have thermostats on the iron. You just put them on from a pull switch, like in some bathrooms have, and you turned them off. So consequently, I was working on a sleeve board, and on the back, you stretch and strain over the blades, okay? So I'm sort of like working on this. So my boss said, oh, look, come and watch this. Okay, I left the iron on the job. Okay, so we're talking about, and he's saying, oh, we should do this, and you do it. So what's that burning? I'd left this iron. So when I took the iron off, there was this big shape of an iron and burnt through onto the back. What do we do? So consequently, the company, which is Wilkinson, they had more fabric, so we just cut a new back. This is what happens. You learn by your mistakes. You make mistakes, but it's a learning process.
Can you describe the area when you first started working here? So in Savile Row.
Yes. When I sort of left my apprenticeship, everybody was wearing, like, in the cutting room, stiff collars, which means the collar comes off and you fasten it on. Some had cuffs, which are stiff, very narrow lapels. Everybody had grey or blue suits. That was it. Smart shoes and just, like, pretty, you know, ordinary ties. But my boss in 1969, Tommy Nutter, opened up across the road at 35A and just made the whole Savile Row look and think, my goodness, what's this fellow doing? Because he had this... You know, you have young contemporaries. Generations grow up with a way of, like, wanting to dress, hair, clothes. You know, it's there. The generations bring, and street clothes and street concepts are created, which are fantastic. They're great. Every generation have them, but they come and go. Whereas what we do stays because it's things we made in the early 70s. We're still altering now. So Tom came along and was worked with Mr. Fish. Mr. Fish came along in the late 60s, bright colours, floral shirts, bright ties, wide collars. And Tom came along and said, yeah, we'll do this with our clothes. So they had wide lapels. Clothes, were made in the same way, like all the other bespoke clothes, but they had a big style element. And he was one of the first people, when you used to walk along Savile Row in 1950s or 60s, they just had cloth in the window. We were one of the first people to put clothes and suits in the window to solicit people in from the outside.
You mentioned Tommy Nutter, so what was it like working for Tommy Nutter? Because since he was like such an influence on Savile Row, what was it like working for him?
Yeah, well, I used to work in Jefferson Hamilton on the corner where Richard James is now. So Tom used to live in Conduit Street, so he'd walk down to Bond Street, turn left, walk along Bond Street, and then come up Clifford Street. And I was working in there brushing the cloth as you used to do when you were sort of just started. And he would just wave. Hey. So someone said, oh, they're really after a new sort of assistant cutter. You know, why don't you go for it? So I said, well, you know, what do you think? He said, yeah, they're a progressive company. Why don't you go? So I had an interview with Tom and Edward, and they just said, yeah, start. So consequently, I started in very early 70, 71. And I was just like a strange person going into their world, because one of the first fittings I was sort of exposed to was like a white suit for this guy called Lichtenstein, and it was big, so they took it all in. And the philosophy for most of the sort of clients and customers along here is that when you get a finished suit, put it on and take it away. But Tom and Edward said, oh, no, we want to sculpture it. We want to make it really fitted. We want to make it sort of really good looking and to our design and our model. And that meant sort of pulling the thing apart. Well, it's, you know, for a white suit, it's like really very difficult. But this has told me exactly what they want to do. They wanted something perfect and great looking. And lots of the clients in those days would tend to pour themselves into the suit to look good, as opposed to, you know, a big sort of ordinary suit that everybody else was producing.
Can we just pause a second so we change the battery?
Did that jacket fit that young fellow?
Yeah, it looks good on him. He's wearing it now.
So how do you feel in your jacket?
I quite like it. They're a lot heavier than you think.
Well, it's a...
My posture would improve.
Well, this is really what happens with the clothes. You feel it in the front side here, and you stand, and it just... Yeah, there's... you don't need that, do you? But there's a double-breasted. I don't think you tried it on last time, did you? Which is quite nice. Francis is... Which is, again, a different model.
like my summer blazer.
You may need to take your sweater off, that's the only thing.
It's so heavy.
It should be alright. That one's slightly looser because it's double.
Okay, we're ready.
Okay. How did your career progress after you'd finished your apprenticeship?
Well, do you mean like the training for bespoke cape making?
Yeah.
Or cutting, or both?
Both.
Both, okay. Well, again, when I finished cape making, I thought, well, you know, I think I really would like to go into cutting, okay? So that's where I had the experience of, like, front of house. So it's just dealing with people, and you're taught that. You know, it's like, oh, what we do and what I do, you can be taught. So it's like, for any inspiring young person, you think, okay, you can do this. It's just a case of the passion, the disciplines, and moving forward. So it's like from coat making, which I could sort of make a coat, into the taking measures and fitting was a natural progression. And it's just a case, my introduction to the world of my boss, you know, would go out to dinner with Bianca Jagger and Mick Jagger, and then come in the next morning, say, well, they're coming in and, you know, they're going to order some clothes with us. Okay. And it's like, what happened, Tom, you know, was really friendly with a fellow that used to own Apple. And when Brian Epstein died, unfortunately, Peter Brown looked after Apple. So you'd get, you know, the Beatles that were splitting up then, walking through backwards and forwards. Yoko Ono, we made her like a brown velvet suit, which, you know, was just, we just made the suits. We just got on with it and made them. And lots of the bands on that particular stage, you know, just wanted clothes by Tom, which was, you know, really quite nice. So he'd go out with an evening with, like, have dinner at John Schlesinger's, who's a film producer. And he'd have Ingrid Boding, who was, you know, and Twiggy for dinner. And then they'd go off partying afterwards. So it's one of these sort of things that, you know, women came and had the clothes as well as the men. And with the iconic photographs of Justin and Twiggy getting out that taxi in those tweed outfits was just every day. You know, it was just one of these things that we did.
Can you tell us about the history or the style of your house?
Well, it's just, it hasn't changed, really. It's just a case of, we feel that the quality of the bespoke tailoring is gotten better. Because in those early days when Tom would have something in let's say, the English Vogue, and then you'd go to the French or the Italian or the American Vogue, you see all these Italian designers had hundreds of pages, and Tom would just have one, because there was no finance, and there isn't any finance from the big companies here in London, whereas abroad they've had it from year one. So consequently, we just had like everyday people sort of coming in and saying, oh, can you please make us a suit? Okay, of course we can, but we just made it and that was it, got paid, and then went on to the next one. Whereas in Europe, it was, you know, totally different. They had like huge companies assisting them, you know, wanted to sort of mentor them and develop their brands. Never happened in England. So consequently, you think, well, you know, it's really a bit difficult for English, small English companies starting up, unless you are ready to wear, where people seem to throw money on it. Bespoke is very, very different.
Can you tell us about the techniques you use in your work?
It's a craft that has been taught from very many, many years ago, and we've just carried it forward. So basically, when you look at the fabric once upon a time in those sort of 50s and 60s were quite heavy. You know, an average fabric was about 14, 15, 16 ounce, whereas now it's like 9, 10, possibly 11. So the skills in making those are so much different. But we sort of step up to the challenge because we have to. So, you know, basically, the basic model that we have in those days, the signature piece was two buttons, a DB lapel, two cross flap pockets, out ticket flap, very close high armhole, and a straight shoulder line. And the ingredients from the Irish linen and horsehair in the makeup of the canvas with the demet gives the structure that we like and we use today. Trousers, again, from those early days, most of them were plain fronts until we introduced the Oxford bags, and they tended to promote pleats, so we kept pleats. And, you know, blokes like pleated trousers and use them with a, you know, pockets, which are very useful.
What is the history of text? Tell us the important tools of your trade. So is there any type of tool that you always have to use?
Yeah, well, of course you need shears. And the best ones we use are a company called Weiss from America. But the Japanese now are producing some great steel scissors. Thimbles, big problem to get hold of proper thimbles at the moment. They're not making them in this country. They're going to China. And what's happened, the little indentations that take the top of the needle, like the eye of the needle, to push it through and sew all day, are getting very sort of like shallow. So consequently, we have to try and get thimbles from the past. Very difficult, because the new ones are like not good at all. So it's needle and thimble, thread, basting cotton, which we use, change, lots of different changes. So we have to source what we like. So we're working with about five different types of basting cotton. Sewing threads, the silk once upon a time, you used to be able to get big reels of silk. You'd pay them about £5. The English company can't get it anymore. The company said, oh, we, you know, we're sort of struggling to, you know, put our prices up. People won't pay if we put our prices up. Yes, they will. For a small spool, we pay like four times as much. So English companies go out of business, and it's very, very difficult to kickstart there. And it happens with buttons and linings and everything else. English companies do not have the finance that other companies have, which is a tragedy. The ingredients, Melton, you've just seen, which is we're using that from the same day one. Again, the Irish linen, what we use for the canvases, no problem. Quality of linings, we're just getting better and better with our quality of linings. But when I first started, they used silk most of the time. They had a good quality, what they call ermazine. And also they used like a mohair lining, which again was great quality. Cannot get any more.
The cut and style of things you make change over time. So, say when you first worked with
Tominata
to now, or has it not changed?
Well, it has, because what happened when we was with Edward and Tom, there was a period where Armani came in, and Armani was like, gosh, because everybody wanted an Armani suit. And poor George Clooney still wears Armani, and you think, my goodness, this, you know, it's a statement, and everybody wanted wide shoulders, wide look. So we interpreted that sort of in our way, because it's like, you know, when you have a, like a wider shoulder, you don't just widen the shoulders here and make the armhole bigger, because what happens, you get this awful run. So what happens, you straighten the shoulder line, so you get your width from this section as opposed to here. So technically there are ways of doing these things. So we went through that, and, you know, we weren't sort of like that happy, and so we just stayed with our model. And we're very fortunate that Tom Ford, that has the best ready-to-wear in the world at the moment, just picked up Tom's style. So consequently now we have quite a few people coming in saying, oh, we've been to Tom Ford, the fabric's not that brilliant, the cuffs are machine, not handmade, can you do something? And we say, yeah, of course we can, it'd be a pleasure.
Can you tell us about the relationships between different tailors?
Yeah, we think Savile Row has been sort of, has an existence. It's been there since 1700 and something, and it used to be doctors along here. When the tailors started coming in, well, the doctors thought, well, this is no good, we'll go to Harley Street. So consequently, Gives and Hawks were now Gives. They were two different companies. One was Gives, and they were sort of, I think, military tailors and naval tailors, and Hawks, Hawks were military tailors, and they used to make clothes for like Napoleon and all the sort of officers in the French and English army. So, you know, they've got a great heritage, and you think, well, when you go and open their manuals and it's got Napoleon Bonaparte inside, you think, like, how can you compete with these fellows? But that was a long time ago. They're contemporary people, are not quite the same. But they all have a voice, and they all have a quality, and they all have a style. And everybody along here makes beautiful clothes, but everybody has their house style, and ours is not quite the same as Henry Paul, Huntsman's, Kilgour, Gives and Hawks, or Anderson Shepherd. A bit different.
What is your most memorable job of a customer, best and worst?
I don't know. You know, we have all good experience with our clients because you build up a relationship. And the thing is, again, with our clients, you know, we give them a voice. We listen to them because we have stories here of clients coming in and saying, oh, I had something made around the corner. Because we do. We have clients, you know, come to us and they go to all the other tailors and they said my sleeves were the correct length and I always wanted them a bit shorter. So they were shortened for you. That's not a big deal. And the tailor went sort of shortened them. So, you know, we listen to our clients and, you know, what we have and what we sort of talk through is not always the best for the client. So we have this this sort of fitting period where we can say, look, we can alter this, we can work with you, and we do it. And that's why we give, you know, quite a few fittings.
Can you tell us about any funny or challenging experiences you've had with your colleagues at work?
When I was with Tom, I was making sort of cutting an overcoat for this prince, another drama, and sort of cashmere is cut one way and it has a pile on it. So I cut the silly old thing the wrong way. So I wrapped it up, went round to the company, bought the fabric myself and redid it. So that was really like, again, a bitter pill. And you learn these things and you do not forget them. So that was one of the traumas. Yeah, when making clothes for people is not necessarily like a horse race, but it is. Because you make them, you think, oh, come, let's hope it works well. Let's hope the client likes it, pays, and then goes off and comes back. And we've been very fortunate. We have some great clients here. Great clients.
How do you feel about the division of labour within the trade and your place in it?
It's division of labour, I don't know. What happens here is that, you know, we have people that work for us and they're on a sort of PAYE, but we also have people, proper tailors, just, you know, are paid for what they earn. So they'll make you a jacket and there's a going price for it. We're happy to pay whatever it costs just to get the product that we want. We might overpay, I don't know, it doesn't matter, as long as we get the product that we want. And that's really very important. And the thing is, we're sort of very fortunate that the young people work for us. You know, they have this ability to create things and they say, well, let's make it better. Let's just try and achieve something better. It's ongoing, and we're very fortunate about that, because our guys go out and have drinks with the other tailors and they all say, why do you pour all this work into your jackets and your trousers? That's what we do. It's just something that we do. Well, yeah, but you can cut down this and cut down that and it doesn't make any difference. Well, it does to us, because, you know, it's proper and this is really what we want to get the reputation for, because we want to compete with the best, not necessarily in this country, but in France and Italy, and they're so good. Because going back to Tommy, it's like in 1969 when he came on the scene, it's a company called Com de Luca that, you know, they produced very beautiful clothes. Even now they do, but style-wise, they're not quite the same. So whereas our and Tom's clothes were more stylized, but the quality of the make wasn't quite so competitive. Now we feel that the quality of make competes with them, and also we're stylized and probably a little bit more stylized.
What are the advantages and different disadvantages about being specialized in your craft?
Well, I suppose we are specialized. I suppose we're just a very small specialized company, and but we couldn't go any other way, because, you know, for me, you know, when I first started, you had like bespoke and you had ready to wear. There wasn't a lot of ready to wear, but since late 60s, it's caught up. So now there's some fantastic ready to wear, and, you know, bespoke's got to pull away and give the client that little bit more. So that's in like quality of cut and make and quality of fabric. And the choice.
And how do you feel about the work that you do?
Well, I'm inspired by it. I love it. I adore it. And it's, you know, it's for me to say we can do better when, you know, you think, well, that's as good as we've done so far. But I think it's very important to say we can do better. And I'm very fortunate with the young people working for me. They have that same sort of, inspiration and ability to move forward, because we have to, can't stand still.
And tell us how you think Savile Row has developed in terms of technology.
Boring, not really. I don't think we haven't. Oh, yes, we have, because, you know, we've got sort of computers and iPhones, and we have this now, you know, we have an Instagram, we blog, and people read about us around the world, which they never normally would. Because when we sell a suit, we make it, and someone says, oh, you know, do you want to come see my tailor? It's a word of mouth recommendation. And somebody now will probably write about us. So we get people coming in from like Singapore, Hong Kong, who we would never look at, because, you know, we're in a basement area, and so, you know, there's very little passing trade, as they say, but people find out about us and they walk past all these other fantastic companies like Henry Paul and Kilgour to come to us. So it's very rewarding, and we're very fortunate about the new technology that's developing. Our website's like rubbish at the moment because it's old, but we have now, we've put in place someone to come and look at it and just develop the website.
How do you go about quality control?
Well, if it's not right, it has to be redone. Small things you can get away with, but from the very beginning, we find out whether there's a problem with the cloth, whether there's a problem in the actual sort of issue of the product that we're using. But within the fittings, we find these out. And we're just saying today that when we put buttons on a jacket, we press it, and if there's any small bastings that we look on the inside, any chalk marks have to come off before we can sort of get this in the post to anybody or let anybody have it. So everybody is made aware of what's demanded from them.
And looking back, is there anything you would have done differently in your career?
I don't know. Yeah, it's a different generation now from then. And I think, yeah, there's, you know, you can't go back. Hey, you have to go forward. So, yeah, hey, there's a few things, but I feel I've just got energy to go forward, which I'm really very excited about.
And how does training differ now than it used to be?
Oh, considerable. It's really, you know, it's, you had to fight for everything when I was young. And the only way I would get to fit a suit is if, you know, my boss, and, you know, people used to drink a lot in those early days. So every lunchtime, all the cutters would be around the pub talking about their experiences. And, you know, I didn't drink. So I stayed in, and if a client came in and said, oh, I haven't got time to wait for this fellow, okay, come in the fitting room, I'll fit you. So consequently, you know, that's how you got your experience. Whereas now, I think, you know, you can just, you know, you young people, when we feel they're strong enough, because like before I was saying that if you're taught correctly and you get sort of like a slap in the face, or not literally, but if you get told off, you know, you have to believe in yourself to have the strength to get through. And that's really very important, because some people, if you're told off, you think, okay, you know, you have to lie down or you need to go, and you don't come back. And that's really not the way it should be. It's a slow process, and you develop the professionalism that you're taught, as well as mentally and being aware of what can go on, and you know, you're strong inside. Very important.
And what quality does a person need to work in this business?
I don't think they have the quality. I think they just have to have the passion and the skills that are developed and taught. And I think, you know, if they're happy with that, you can move forward pretty easily.
Where do you see Savile Row in the future?
Well, we're very excited about branding in Savile Row, because now they're trying to get some EU commission to say that if you use the name Savile Row, you have to be part of Savile Row. And so there's so many companies around the world that say, oh, we're Savile Row based, and they aren't. So we're hoping that if the EU will pass this that legislation saying, oh yeah, if you're in Savile Row, you can use the name Savile Row. Or similar to champagne, you know, you can have sparkling wine, but you can only call it champagne if it comes from the champagne area. And that's what we have. You know, you can say you're you know, bespoke tailor, but you can't say you're from Savile Row unless you're working in it, which is quite exciting.
And what is it like being a young person coming into this industry now?
I don't know. Well, perhaps you could chat to the young people.
what was it like for you?
Yeah, not easy. You know, it wasn't easy. I think I was living in the East End, so I'd get a number 30 bus and up to Shaftesbury Avenue, start at 8:30. I think I got about £5 for my first sort of, like, you know, week. So with deductions and everything else, I used to get up. But yeah, hey, you do these things. And yeah, a lot of people say the money isn't the issue. The main is the skill factor. And I think that's something that you know, it's easier to learn now because young people can fast track themselves. Once upon a time, people say, oh, it's 7 hours, 7 years to learn how to make a coat and to do other things. Hey, you can do it a lot less if you have a passion and you push yourself.
And do you have any advice for, say, us students about this business?
Yeah, because, you know, you go to college and you think, okay, everybody starts off wanting to be a designer. Well, great, okay, because London's, you know, there's lots of opportunities to design. But if you want to be a tailor and adopt the skills and be able to sort of tailor all day, you know, you have to be taught correctly. And, you know, Newham College is great, you know, because most of our young people come from Newham College, London College of Fashion, which is more design orientated. But, you know, if you have the passion, you can learn to sew. And it's, you know, lots of people here come and shadow us for the day. And we get so many people just saying, oh, you know, can we just be part of what we do? Or you can, but, you know, we can't have everybody here. But Huntsman's have people in there, Henry Paul, Anderson & Shepherd. You know, they're big companies, so they're a lot more sort of, you know, so organised, and the finance is better than ours. But we support as many young people as we can.
Just a quick one. When you was an apprentice, could you talk us through what a typical day was?
I started at 8:30. Forgive me. When I first started as an apprentice, again, I was in Great Wimble Street on the top floor. Can't remember the name. It's on the corner. I think it's the bottom floor is like an art gallery now. And I used to have to get in at 8:30. So when I get in, turn the irons on, and just prepare things for the day. So it could be like pocket making, when I put the pockets in. It could be padding, which is again something that, you know, you start off doing. And you'd work until 6 and then get the bus home. So it was all part of the general coat making sort of systems of the day, but we made everything ourselves. Lots of people now have pocket makers, whereas we made everything ourselves. So the style of putting outpress welts in is different now to what it was when I was young. Lots of people cut through the canvas. We used to put our pocket in first and then canvas. Pockets, again, similar, most of them are flat pockets, whereas in the early days we'd put Melton underneath, so they'd last a lot longer. Now a lot of it is lining. But the inbreast pockets are similar to what we did those days, but I think our inbreast pockets are more stylized and better now. Because again, it's like one of our young people, he sort of looks at the ready-to-wear, and these on ready-to-wear, the inbreast pockets are put in by a machine. Well, the technique is just a machine comes along and pounds it, but they give, you know, really quite nice slim jettings. So they've adapted their own style to make that ourselves. So now our pockets are better than the ready-to-wear, which is quite exciting. So you can learn from these things. So I did Saturday morning as well. So it was a 5 day plus Saturday morning. And I think my first wage was like £5. So, you know, not easy, but hey, you know, you do these things. And I was pleased I did.
Yeah. Any other questions?
It's just like young people, I would like to give some sort of inspiration. If a young person was to say, like, I really would like to come and, you know, learn to be a tailor or learn to do cutting that I do, I can just give you encouragement, because I think it's a future that you can get rewards from, but it has to be in you. You can't play at it. But then again, there are other sort of spin-offs. You know, you can like learn to sew, and you can put buttonholes in and sew, and you're paid reasonably well. If you're a trouser maker, you get paid very well. But again, the process is very similar to jacket making. It's just a different sort of like section. Waistcoat makers, big gapping waistcoat makers. Or if you want to do, you know, what I do and Michael's learning and France is learning to be cutter, again, that's really probably where the skills, but you have to have the ability to make or know that what's a problem with the jacket before you start pulling it apart. So every encouragement, but there are all these spin-offs that you might want to go and do designs or sample rooms where you can a designer will come in and give you a little sketch and say, look, make this for me. Okay, I can do that. So there's all these different aspects. But what I will say is that, you know, what ready to wear, what made to order, we don't do that. Everything here is bespoke, whether it's a shirt, a tie, or jacket, waistcoat, trousers, overcoats, dress wear. It's all bespoke, and we try and get that very, very high quality that we're, you know, we want to relate to the client.
Okay. I think you also told me that Beatles Abbey Road cover.
Oh, right, yeah. When Brian Epstein sadly died, Peter Brown was looking after Apple Corps. So Tom had a sort of very strong relationship with them, with Peter. So consequently, all the Beatles used to come to us just that first, from 69. Well, I wasn't there in 69, but, you know, it was all the same designs as when I came, like, almost a year later. But the Abbey Road cover was when Tommy and Edward made these suits when they were marching over the pedestrian crossing, which was, again, it's iconic. And there's a few iconic with Mick and Bianca in the back of the taxi, where we made Mick Jagger's suit, but we made sort of other suits for Bianca and Twiggy and Justin and lots of the rock bands of that sort of early period. And yeah, it was very exciting, because everybody wanted a Tommy Nutter suit in those early 70s. And, you know, it looked different, whereas you'd have Huntsman's had their particular look. Henry Paul had their look, we had our definite look. And men used to wear bright colours. We used to make sort of like pink, O'Donnell, red. Tommy had a red velvet suit with braiding all the way around. Very exciting. And now we're making velvet for ourselves here, which is, again, fantastic.
What's Savile Row's relationship with Soho?
Well, I don't think really Savile Row has a relationship with Soho. What happens is that lots of tailors are in Soho because the workshops here, where they used to have lots of workshops, you know, they're drifting into Soho. But what happens if somebody comes to Savile Row and says, look, you know, can you make me a suit? Oh, yes, it's like £4,000. Oh, I don't think I can really have that. Then, but there are tailors in Soho that may make them for £1,000 or £1,500. So the tailors there do not go through the same procedures as we do. So it's with fabric and the make, whereas we are trying to compete with the best in the world. They're just competing for price. So that's the big thing about Soho.
Are they used as outworkers by Savile Row at all?
Oh, yes. We don't have anybody in Soho proper, but we have trouser makers that work in just off Regent Street, because the workshops, we can't keep everybody here. We'd love to be able to, whereas the bigger companies do. So we have outworkers that work just on the other side of Regent Street, and they make some of our things there. But most of it's in-house, because we have total control. Because it's like if we want to make sure that our cuffs are the way they ought to be, if someone says, "Oh, you know, is that okay?" Yeah, that's fine. Or if you know, the collar's not quite right, is that okay? Oh yeah, that's fine. That's how we want it. So consequently, that's a great asset to have somebody here asking the question, as opposed to you giving out to someone, and then they bring it in, you look at it, and you think, well, that's not for us. I'm sorry, this has to be altered and this has to be changed. And that's sort of where it gets sort of expensive, because we do change it, because if it isn't what we want, it has to be changed.